desire y'all's prayers this evening. Have a little message on my heart this evening that hopefully will be an encouraging message to us. My thought tonight is around the statement, God is real. I was reading this week in some of my studies and read about a man. He went out into the woods and was looking at the trees, and he noticed this one old tree. It lost all of its leaves. It was bare. The limbs looked like they were pretty much about to fall off the tree. It just looked dead. Like nothing was going to ever happen with that tree. But the man had been in the woods before, and he knew this particular tree. And he also knew that it was springtime was just a couple of weeks around the corner. And so as he contemplated the tree and is considering what was going to happen in the next few weeks, he realized, you know, in just probably 2 to 3 weeks, this tree is going to leaf out. It's going to start blossoming. Its life is going to come back to the tree. It's going to go back to growing vigorously like it's done the years before. And as he stood there and contemplated that apparent dead tree, it said he started realizing God is here. God is here right now in this tree, getting it ready for spring. God is real. God is working. You might not be able to see him now, but come back in 3 weeks and take a look at that tree. So I'd like to ask us this evening, how close do we feel to God? How real, how immediate is he to us this evening? So I'm going to start off reading in Nehemiah. Now Nehemiah, we all know, had been taken captive. And as a captive, he had received words there in the first chapter of Nehemiah talking about the problems that were going on back in Jerusalem, how things were destroyed, broken down. And his heart he wanted so badly to be able to go to rebuild the city. And he spends some time there in chapter 1 praying to the Lord about that you know, the Lord would be willing to turn the hearts of the people back to God and that he could go work to help rebuild the town. And so we're going to start there in Nehemiah chapter 1 verse 11. And Nehemiah prays, O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, and to the prayer of thy servants who desire to fear thy name. And prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. So we see here Nehemiah basically has been praying, Lord, I would like to be able to ask the king a question. I want to ask him about this, and I would love to have an opportunity. So going on into chapter 2 there, and it came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes, the king, that wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said unto me, Why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid, and said unto the king, Let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, For what dost thou make request? And I love this next line, so I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said unto the king, If it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldst send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchre, that I may build it. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, For how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Now isn't this a beautiful sight? Jeremiah had gotten word that Jerusalem just was in ruins. And that may seem depressing, but we have record of what did he do when he got the news. He went and he prayed to the Lord. And we read there in Nehemiah 1:11, how he ended his prayer. Lord, help me to speak to the king. Help me know what to say. And so he goes out. We don't have a time frame. I'm just presuming right here. It must have been fairly quick. Goes out in front of the king, and this is on his mind. And the king looks at him. Nehemiah, you've not been sad in my presence before. Something's got you. And it's in your heart. This is not a physical ailment. This is something deep within you. What is it? And now Nehemiah is like, okay, well, my town, Jerusalem, it's in waste. The gates have been burnt, and, you know, I'd like to go build it. And then the king wants to know, you know, what do you make request? And his response, once again, to me, just shows how real God was to Nehemiah. Because I've pondered this. Let's say you're a prisoner in our land today, and you have to go before the president to appeal a pardon on your behalf. You want a pardon and a release from prison. And you walk up in front of the president, and everybody's watching. This is not something that would be done, probably just you and him. It would be more than likely many people. And it's time for you to speak. And the president says, what do you want? And I love what it says Nehemiah did. I prayed. I turned to God and said, okay, Lord, I'm here where I get to make my request to the king. No. And even though I've already prayed, even though I prayed before I got here, you are God and you're real. And so before I open my mouth to answer, in this case, the scenario of the president, I'm going to pause and momentarily remain silent while I lift my heart to a very real God to say, help me, Lord, so that when I'm done speaking, I get the pardon. I get to walk free. How many of us think we would actually think in a scenario like that to pause and turn our hearts to God? Or would we potentially be, dare I say, sometimes a little awestruck at maybe being in the presence of the president of a country? I've been around people in the military during 1994. It was the 50th anniversary of the D-Day invasion, and I got to go partake in that. And one of the things that I actually got to do, which was kind of neat, was to greet some of the dignitaries that came in to the airport and then help them get to their different destinations. I've met kings and queens and various senators and people, and it was quite interesting. But what was also interesting was to watch the way different people reacted. And some people, it was royalty, and they didn't know what to say. They would literally just stand there and stutter. And what do we do when we go before the King of Heaven? Do we recognize Him above the kings of earth? How real He is? There was a sister that I've heard. I don't know her name. I've just heard the story repeated. She was out in California, and they were driving down the road, and suddenly the traffic goes wrong, and they're about to be involved in a car crash. And it said her cry was, Lord, come quick. Now, I've thought about that. What does that tell you about how real God was to her? She didn't holler at the driver, hey, you need to dodge that car, you need to put on the brakes, or speed up, slow down, or anything like that. Might not have been a bad thing to do, depending upon the circumstances. But no, what was her cry? In the time of an immediate need, her cry was, Lord, come quick. That was it, a simple prayer. But I love that simple prayer, because you know what it implies? Lord, if I call, you're going to look my way. And if you look my way, you're going to see what's happening. I don't need to spend a lot of time explaining it to you. You're going to know what to do. All I need you to do is look my way and get here in a hurry. Isn't it nice to have a real God we can cry out to? A God that no matter what the circumstances are, whether you're a prisoner standing before a king looking for a release, or you're just a regular everyday person in, dare we say it, common circumstances in life, and you need help, God is there for us. Now let's go to Job chapter 1. Job chapter 1, I want to start in the 13th verse. And there was a day when his son, this is speaking of Job, and there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And there came a messenger unto Job and said, the oxen were plowing, and the asses feeding beside them. And the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came another, and said, the fire of God is fallen from heaven, and hath burned up the sheep and their servants, and consumed them, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came another also, and said, the Chaldeans made out three bands, and fell upon the camels, and have carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another, and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness, and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. And this is what I love about Job. He's basically just been told, you've lost your livelihood. Your job in our world today, you've just lost everything you used to make money and support your family. And you've also just had all your children die. Seems like it would be a dire circumstance you find yourself in. But Job's response, then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshipped. And said, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. How real was God in Job's life? You know, Job sat there, and he's sitting there looking, and he's like, you know, I've got all of this stuff. It's just gone. I think about the folks in our world today losing their jobs. That's not a good feeling to get notice. Your job's over. You might start thinking, how do I support my family? How do I put food on the table? Now imagine in our world today, if you turned around and by the time you got that, you got a call from somebody saying, hey, somebody had all your kids in a car and they were headed into town and there's a big accident and all your kids are gone. Would you think to turn to the Lord and worship Him at that time? To turn to the Lord and basically say, God, you gave us everything. It was all yours anyway. All of it was just borrowed. None of it was mine. You may have it back, Lord. I'll miss the children. I'll miss them. But Lord, you're gracious for the time I had. I appreciate that. It's a real God that he was talking to. And even later when the boils came upon him in the second chapter, you know, and now his wife follows up with him. And if you remember when his wife told him, she's like, why don't you curse God and God die? And even still, Job's response there in the Job 2, verse 10, but he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil? In all of this, did not Job sin with his lips? And I know this may sound like a dire circumstance, but have we thought about how real God can be even when everything seems to be just falling apart around you? That God is still real. You can still trust in Him. You don't have to worry. It doesn't mean you don't have sorrow of heart. You can go read the rest of Job. There was sorrow of heart. But how did the book of Job end? There was a restoration of a job. There was a restoration of livelihood. There was restoration of family. God is real. Now I want to go to Matthew chapter 8. Matthew chapter 8, starting in verse 5. And when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion beseeching him and saying, Lord, my servant lieth at home sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Jesus saith unto him, I will come and heal him. The centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldst come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to one man, go, and he goeth, and to another man, come, and he cometh, and to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to them that followed, Verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. Now let's think about this centurion. This man's faith, Jesus remarked upon, and this man wasn't even a Jew. Jesus said, I haven't found faith like this in all of Israel. How real was God to this centurion? Now, I know we could say, well, Jesus was standing right in front of him, very real. But even though Jesus was standing in front of him, when Jesus said, I'm going to come to your house, the man didn't say, great, that's exactly what I was looking for. I really need you to come to my house so my servant can be healed. What was his response? I'm not worthy for you to come into my house. I know enough about you and how real you are. I don't need you coming under my roof. You're a man of authority. Just speak the word. Do we know the God of authority today that could just speak the word? Can take away the issues, the concerns we have? I mean, it would have been a privilege, no doubt, to have Jesus come home. I don't know about you all, but sometimes I think if I had an opportunity for the Lord to come to my house, to me that would be just a wonderful thing. But this man was like, I'm not worthy. Yes, it would probably be wonderful, but Lord, all I need is you to exercise your power. And my needs will be met. I don't need you to come. Let's go down to Matthew 15. Matthew 15, starting in verse 21. Then Jesus went thence and departed into the coast of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman in Canaan came out of the same coast and cried unto him, saying, Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil. But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and besought him, saying, Send her away, for she crieth after us. But he answered and said, I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then came she and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, It is not meet to take the children's bread and to cast it to the dogs. And she said, Truth, Lord, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from their master's table. Then Jesus answered and said unto her, O woman, great is thy faith, be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was made whole from that very hour. Now, the thing that struck me about this story, this woman came. Jesus had actually gone to this town and really wasn't wanting to be found. He was kind of trying to lay low, if you read some of the other accounts. And this woman heard, however, Jesus has come to town. And she found out where he was at. And so she goes there and she starts crying because she had a need. Have you ever felt like the Lord wasn't moved when you cry? You're crying and you don't see any action. You see nothing. What struck me though is this woman. Did she act like he didn't hear? No. She kept crying. I have could kind of see it in her mind. Okay. I don't know why he's not reacting. But I can get louder. I'm going to get louder. He's got to be hearing me. There's no way he can't hear me. I'm help! Just crying. Still nothing. Then she spies his disciples. Those men know him. So he goes, starts bugging them. I know you guys can hear me because you're out here. He may be in the house, and I know he can hear me in the walls, but you guys can hear me out here. You need to go tell him I need help. How real was Jesus to her? He's in that house, and I need help. I ain't leaving y'all alone till you go get him. The disciples did what? They go in the house, Lord. That woman's bugging us. You really need to just tell her to go away. And Jesus' response is, I'm not sent to her people. I'm not here to help her. Did that deter her? Nope. She's like, he acknowledged me. It's a step in the right direction. He now knows I exist. And so what did she do? I'm going to go worship him. I'm going to go bow down. Lord, help me. And his response, we don't give dogs food from the children's table. It would still look like the Lord was just not going to help. But what was her response? Absolutely, Lord, you're right. Nobody would give dogs off the table, food from the table to the dogs. But the crumbs are the dogs. I may be a dog, Lord, I'm just wanting a crumb. What kind of things had she heard about him? The healings he had probably done. Those healings had been real to her. Her mind was like, I have a daughter that needs help. And Jesus is real. I've heard the stories. I've heard him from enough people. This is true. He's in my town. He's not going to leave town without talking to me if I have anything to do about it. God was real to her. And even though it appeared like he was not acknowledging her, even though it appeared like he told her she wasn't worthy, do you know what she also knew about the Lord? He's been healing everybody. Why not me? He's the real God. He's the God that came down to heal people. That's what I know about him. Let's look at Acts chapter 10. Acts chapter 10, we'll start in verse 1. There was a certain man in Caesarea called Cornelius, a centurion of the band called the Italian Band, a devout man and one that feared God with all his house, which gave much alms to the people and prayed to God always. He saw in a vision evidently about the ninth hour of the day an angel of God coming into him and saying unto him, Cornelius. And when he looked on him, he was afraid and said, What is it, Lord? And he said unto him, Thy prayers and thine alms are come up for memorial before God. And now send men to Joppa and call for one Simon, whose surname is Peter. He lodgeth with one Simon a tanner, whose house is by the seaside. He shall tell thee what thou oughtst to do. And when the angel which spake unto Cornelius was departed, he called two of his household servants, and a devout soldier of them that waited on him continually. And when he had declared all these things unto them, he sent them to Joppa. Now, we know the story of Cornelius, right? Now, the ninth hour is about 3 or 4 p.m. He has a vision. This angel comes down and tells him, you need to go get this man that's in this house over on this street of another man and tell him to come. He's got something for you. Now, what did he do after that vision? Did he step back and say, you know what, that's kind of strange. I wonder what that was all about. I probably need to go bounce this off of somebody to see what they think about this vision I just had, and maybe help me interpret it, see what I'm supposed to do. You know, you hear that a lot in the Old Testament, didn't you? There was a vision, and then people would go get advice. Maybe he could have said, you know what? That's kind of strange to be told to go send for a fellow I don't know at a man's house that I don't know either. Just out the blue, show up and invite him home. Maybe I need to sleep on it, see if I get that vision again. Maybe wait a day or two. Did he do that? You know what? I think there's a reason why his alms came up before the Lord. Because it said as soon as the vision disappeared, he went, got two of his servants and one of his guards and says, guess what, folks? Let me give you some instructions. You got to go to this town. You got to go find this man. He's in this man's house. And you get him and you go tell him to come here. The Lord told him he's got something for us. Now, you generally don't depart on a journey in the afternoon. But it sounds like he pretty much just said, now y'all get on down the road. This is important business. You know, that man had no doubt that God was real. And so when he saw the vision, it wasn't a strange thing to him, I don't think, that God's talking to me. Wow, is this really God? No, he's like, I've had conversations with God. I know this voice. It may be an angel, but I recognize that's one of the servants of my master talking to me, and I need to be obedient. I've just been given a set of instructions. I have to take action. Why? God is real. God is absolutely real. And so he sends them in. And they get Peter. Now, didn't Peter also have to have a little bit of faith that God was real? Because as the men showed up at the house, Peter's having his own vision where God's talking to him, giving him a vision. Why? Because he's real. He had already told Cornelius, Peter's going to come. Now he's telling Peter, you're going to go. And because two men believed God was real, what happened to Cornelius' household? And dare I say, potentially others that he knew. It said that as Peter was preaching, the Holy Ghost fell on everyone that heard the preaching. Everyone that was in earshot got saved. How real is God? That blessing that Cornelius had been told he was going to get, it happened. And even Peter still, it almost sounds like he'd had doubts, dare I say. Because after the Holy Ghost fell, what did Peter say? You know what, folks? He looked at the rest of the folks with him and said, you know what? Is there any man that sees a reason why these folks should be baptized? Since the Holy Ghost has fell on them, just like on us. What did he saw? God was real. The Spirit came down. You can't deny that. It's real. I would challenge us all today. Get in touch with the real God. Let him into your life. Let him work in your life. Learn to know his voice. Take a note from the little woman. Don't be afraid to pester him a bit. We have other scriptures that talk about the unjust judge, and Jesus was using that as a metaphor for saying sometimes you're going to be reaching out and you may not get an instant answer. But guess what? Don't give up hope. Why? Because I'm real. I'm God. I hear you. You know, if we cry out to God, He hears. If He can hear our cry as a sinner, how much more do you think He hears our cry as one of His children? Y'all pray for me.